I'd like now to welcome George Rubottom. He is a retired chemist and longtime scuba diver. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Now, you are giving a presentation about camouflage in undersea creatures, and I've seen some of these pictures. They're utterly amazing, not just fish, but all sorts of creatures that dwell on the ocean floor and in coral reefs and so on. What are some examples of different ways that undersea animals camouflage themselves?
Well, it turns out there are several ways that seem to be trends and that are common. One way is certainly fish will blend into their environment beautifully, either by color or by shape, or even by change of color. Another way is that some fish will just simply, some of the high-end predators, for instance, like sharks, will generally become dark on top and light on the bottom, so that if you're looking up at them, you see reflected light and can't see them.
And you think it's sky.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look down, they're the same color essentially as the reef. So they're as predators, they can move along and stay very, very anonymous in their environment.
So it's not that they are keeping themselves safe from predators, it's just that they will be able to sneak up better.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Do sharks have predators?
Other sharks.
Besides us? Oh, right, other sharks.
That's right.
Interesting. So there are some animals that completely blend in with the ocean floor or the corals or the anemones.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. There are others that will, as I say, change color. There are some that hide in crevices and peek out and then will come out. And generally these are the predators that will come out and do this. Like, for instance, eels will do this type of behavior. You can see other animals that will mimic something that's very toxic. There's a whole bunch, a whole plethora of eels that look very much like sea snakes, which are extremely toxic. And I think other animals sense that sea snakes are toxic. They're toxic to the extent that they're probably more dangerous than a cobra if they bite you.
So other undersea creatures don't eat those sea snakes, and so if you evolve camouflage to look like them, no one eats you either.
That's exactly right. So the sea snakes tend to be eaters, not ETs.
Some of the fish that blend in very well also actually have figured out how to put out bait, and then they themselves become fishermen or fisherfish.
That's very right. There's one fish in that class called a frogfish, and the frogfish puts essentially a stem from its upper jaw up over its forehead with a little flowery bait on the end of it.
What does it use as bait?
It's part of the organic matter of the fish.
Oh, it's part of itself.
Yeah, it's a body part.
Now, it doesn't go to the
bait
store.
No, it doesn't scavenge. No, it doesn't. Or a sushi place, either
right.
one. But if these fish are in a situation where another fish will come in, or crustacean or whatever, will come in, their mouth opens so fast that it causes a vacuum and just sucks it in. It's the fastest mouth in the animal world.
And so but meanwhile, they think they don't even see that there's a fish there at all because it's so well camouflaged.
That's correct. That's correct.
So what is fish visual perception like? I mean, we can look at these pictures that you're going to be showing tonight, and we see these animals, these fish and crustaceans and so on, that blend in so well with their environment that we human beings, with our eyeballs and retinas and so on, can't see them. Do other fish and other crustaceans see the way we do?
It's not that they see the way that we do, but they have acute vision. They certainly are able to focus better than we are underwater if we didn't have our mask on. A great example of that is either an octopus or a squid. A squid will come up and sit 2 feet from you for a half an hour and just look at you. And they're wondering what the heck you are. And if you just blow a couple of bubbles in it, they'll come up and look, and then they'll walk away and they'll come back. And they'll do it in a straight line of 5 or 6 squid, very organized fashion. They're clearly thinking of something.
But we don't know what they're thinking of.
No.
And we can get into what happens when human elements get introduced underwater and whether there's evolution to deal with the human element. But in terms of camouflage, it's not only visual camouflage that undersea creatures are using. They're also using, for example, smell camouflage.
Yeah, there's a fish, we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the day, called a stoplight parrotfish. And a stoplight at night will actually sleep. And they'll go down on the reef and sleep. They blend in beautifully. They have a beautiful color blending in. But they also will put a cocoon of mucus around themselves so that the other fish or whatever, the other predator, can't sense that they're there.
And so that's a smell thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
And so do fish sense each other as much by smell as by vision?
Well, I think they sense each other to a great extent by what's called their lateral line. And they'll sense electronic or impulses from other fish. So they are really, really attuned to motion. And especially to the motion that comes with distress. So you can swim with big sharks in the neighborhood all day and you won't see any sharks that are pestering anybody. If you get a distress motion, for instance, a spear hitting a fish, there'll be sharks there in a heartbeat. And it's because they sense this electronic, essentially electric motion in the water due to this lateral line, and they just hone in on it.
And so they know that an animal in distress is easier prey.
That's right. Or at least there's potentially prey there.
Right. I mean, again, humans do the same thing. It's very easy to detect in a crowd, even out of the corner of your eye or through who knows what sensors we really have when a person is distressed.
That's true. But you know, hopefully we don't go over and bite them.
No, but we do have those sensibilities, and who knows what, as chimps, we would have done
right.
When we saw another distressed being, whether it be a zebra or another
exactly.
Chimp.
Exactly.
We're talking to George Rubottom, who will be speaking tonight at the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers, Camouflage in Nature's Underwater Realm. How did you get into scuba diving and the observation of all these amazing undersea beings?
Well, I was teaching chemistry, actually, at the University of Puerto Rico back in the early 70s.
That's nice work if you can get it.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. And we had a friend, two of us who were buddies, had a friend who was a biologist, and he wanted to do work on some benthic brown algae, which is a marine organism. And he needed somebody to collect this algae. So all three of us agreed to go get certified to scuba dive. And so we got certified to scuba dive, and I've been diving ever since.
And you really got interested in what's going on down there. What's the what is it like in Puerto Rico in terms of what kind of fish do you have there? You have coral reefs.
They're coral reefs. It's very much in Puerto Rico. It's very much a Caribbean scene. So you have nice coral reefs, nice some pelagic fish, which are big open water fish. So you do see sharks and you see eels and just the usual group of animals that one would come to expect in the Caribbean.
I went to Guam once and snorkeled there, and it seemed, because the fish were so incredibly colorful, and they had names like Picasso fish and clown fish and all these fish with names that really described what they looked like, very colorful. It was as if, it was like being in the Castro district of San Francisco. It was like, these guys are having fun. These guys are expressing themselves. It didn't look like they were hiding from anybody.
I think a lot of them aren't. I think a lot of them are extremely territorial, too. So you have a beautiful colored fish that stands out. And if you come up to it, even the size of a scuba diver, they'll come out and attack you. Even these little fish that are maybe 3 inches long, they stand no nonsense. I think that...
How do they keep from being eaten?
Well, I think a lot of them eventually they don't. But I think in the interim, you have a short, happy life where you attract a mate because of your behavior patterns in concert with your coloration, for instance, and life goes on. But I think it's fair to say, although it's a very beautiful realm, it's a harsh realm.
Is the coral reef environment more protected than, for example, the area outside the coral reef? Because it seemed that once you went outside the reef, the fish were very much, the colors were gone. They were very much into camouflage.
Yeah, I think that's true, and blend in with their environment as deep water swimmers.
Right.
I think what you find is a situation where on the reefs you get tremendous amount of variety. Whereas in the deep water, you get huge numbers of fish.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the you see in the great fisheries of the world that you know they're not reef areas for the most part. They're deep water, and cold water. So the key to the reefs, the beauty of the reefs, is the diversity and the variedness of the habitat.
When you go into very deep water areas, there's not as much oxygen. There are fewer fish. The eyesight isn't as good. If I remember correctly, we were studying fish for the Guam Aquarium at that time. What forms of camouflage do they use that is different in very deep ocean areas?
I think it's not camouflage. What some of them will use is just speed. Some of them are extremely fast swimmers. The other thing that they'll do is they'll school more so that they give the impression of being a huge organism. So in a sense, it's camouflage by hanging out with all your friends, in the sense that if you hang out with all your friends and a predator comes, it's hard for them to hone in on one individual. Now, somebody's going to get eaten, but over time, it protects you as a species.
When you show these pictures, many of them are, for example, a fish that makes itself into a pole and blends in with underwater vegetation. Mm-hmm. It looks just like it. But that's just one fish. Where are all of its friends?
Oh, all its friends are in the neighboring coral. They're very spread out diversely. Now, they don't school. Okay, they hang out kind of as loners.
So some fish, if they're really adapted to look like vegetation, don't school at all.
That's correct. There's some examples of little seahorses, little pygmy seahorses that are maybe 3/8 of an inch long that live just on a specific type of coral because they look just like that coral.
Yeah, you showed me that photograph, and I couldn't even see it, even when you pointed it out.
It's very hard to pick them out. But you see that there's a two sides to this, because every fish that's using camouflage to avoid being preyed on is also a more efficient predator because things can't see it. So it works to its advantage, to the fish's advantage in two ways.
So for example, little pygmy seahorses, what do they eat?
They eat little microorganisms that come through the water. They kind of filter feed and eat.
So those don't really, they're not predators in the sense that fish are that feed on other fish.
No, and they're certainly not going to attack an 8-foot reef shark. That would just be too big a meal.
Nobody's going to attack an 8-foot reef shark. Well, except, as you say, a 12-foot reef shark.
Right.
We're talking to George Rubottom, retired chemist and longtime scuba diver. So when you look at these fish and you look at this incredible diversity of animals that have evolved and that are surviving at the bottom of the sea, whether it be in deep or shallow water, it seems that they are always on high alert. They're always either trying to eat or trying to keep from being eaten. I mean, they don't get to just kind of hang out with their friends and relax ever.
I think that's pretty true. As I say, it is fairly harsh. Now, we were speaking a little earlier about the parrotfish. They do sleep.
They sleep.
So they feel secure
enough.
Because
they've made themselves soundproof beds.
Well,
I mean, smellproof beds.
That's right. So they feel secure enough in their cocoon to allow them to sleep.
Is sound a factor in the whole predator-prey relationship underwater?
I think sound, in the sense that in a distress motion, you'll get a... For instance, a lot of times if one fish would hit another, you'd hear a thump, and that sound wave would carry, and that will draw predators to the scene.
So do they have sound detectors? I mean, do they have the equivalent, fish equivalent and crustacean equivalent of ears?
Yeah, what they have is, again, they have a lateral line that goes along their body, and they can line up with waves, sound waves, for instance, that come in and intersect them. And by doing this, they can hone in. I think a lot of people think that sharks will come in to, say, a blood trail. But in reality, it would take blood a long, long time to diffuse to where most of these sharks come from. So clearly they come in on another trigger, which most likely is through this lateral line, until they sense blood, and then they follow that.
So you are showing these pictures to young people tonight. And, of course, the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers is both for young people, and young people do get preference in seating, but everybody can come. It's free, and I mean, I think everybody it would behoove everybody to come because these pictures are so cool. But have you shown them a lot to kids? They must go bananas.
No, not really. This is a kind of a first attempt at this, so I'm really excited about doing it.
Really?
Giving people a chance to see what it's like to be underwater.
How did you amass this incredible collection of self-camouflaging beings? Did you take all these pictures yourself?
Yes. You just climb under your tank and go underwater and look around.
Now, when you look around, if the deeper you go, the darker it is. Do you have a headlamp on?
Well, no. What you do is typically interesting things are above 80 feet. So there's plenty of ambient light to see things. At night, you take a light with you. And you'll generally, when you're taking photographs, you'll use a strobe to put light back into a scene that's been taken out by water-absorbing color. So you definitely do need a strobe light or some form of artificial light to get clear photos.
How do you keep them from running away from you? I mean, you and your tank and flippers and bubbles and everything must come off as a very scary thing.
I think you just take your time. When you first start out at this, I must admit you get a tremendous number of pictures of fish's rear ends. But as you practice it and just get calmer and slow down, and wait, the fish will go about their normal business, and you really don't bother them.
Do they get used to areas where there are a lot of divers and snorkelers? Do they say, oh, yeah, here come the humans again? I mean, basically?
Yeah, I think most places, although they're not overpopulated with divers, after a while the fish they'll skitter when you come, but they come right back. They're very territorial, so they're not going to go far. They come right back to their home ground and carry on with their business.
One of the mechanisms that they've evolved, that some fish have evolved, that don't blend in with anything, is just simply hiding inside of anemones and reef structures.
Mm-hmm. And that's...
you can't really call it camouflage.
No, not in a sense. Some things really do just hide in crevices and look out. But it's you'll find that when they come out, a lot of these animals are camouflaged pretty well, either to look like things that are poisonous or to look like the environment that they habituate. But it is true that a lot of them really will just kind of hide in a crevice and look out.
You were showing me earlier a picture of something called an alligator fish, and when you came across it, you said, now that's a scary-looking thing. And when you think about the human fear response, we're scared of alligators because alligators are things that can kill us, and we know that both because we learned it in school and because we probably have some evolutionary memory about alligators and crocodiles and things like that. When another fish sees an alligator fish, do they also have a fear response? Because they don't really know alligators.
I think they might have a fear response, but it's based purely on the behavior of the alligator fish and how he reacts. It has nothing to do with what they think lives in the Everglades, that's for sure.
Right.
But I would love to take you with me down and see one of these and see what your response would be to it, too.
Oh, I'm sure I'd be.
they're scary.
No, they're scary just in the pictures. There is such a tremendous beauty in these creatures, in these many manifestations of both animal and vegetable life, to put it that way, under the water. And I find myself wondering, because when you go to an art museum and then you go snorkeling, to me, the creatures under the sea win the beauty contest hands down. Do you think that anybody besides we human beings perceive that beauty? It seems so hard to believe that they are not engaging in some kind of expression.
Well, it's tempting to think that.
I know, but then are we anthropomorphizing everything we see? Probably.
Maybe a little bit, but it is clear that the behavior of among members of the species do it cause attractions that lead to some protracted relationship between consenting adult fish.
Right.
So it certainly is a situation where the beauty, however it's defined, maybe not in human terms at all, is definitely recognized.
George Rubottom is a retired chemist and a longtime scuba diver. George, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for letting me be on.